Today's episode of Talking Games is brought to you by Cards Against Humanity, and they asked us not to read an ad. Hey, Kellen.
Hey, Tim.
How do we get these fine sponsors?
Well, we are part of the Chicago Podcasting Co-op, which is a cooperative of entertainers and producers of goods and services who teamed up to form a collective of entertainers for you.
That's right.
That's it. That's as much as I got.
Judges.
Judges.
Well, yep, they're saying
9 out of 10.
Wow,
nice.
I tried listening to some other podcasts to see what they say, and it's so long.
Is that right?
Oh, it's much longer.
Sure.
They give a much deeper description.
History of the CPC and its founders.
You know what? I appreciate that. Let me make one up for all you guys right
okay.
now.
Yeah.
The year is 1965. America
all
is
along the watchtower.
I was going to do Queen,
the America is becoming embroiled in the conflict in Vietnam, and President John F. Kennedy.
I have a dream.
Well, of all the people you could have impersonated from the '60s,
the podcasters in America will join together in a collective.
That's right, that is Martin Luther Podcast Jr., the inventor of podcasts and also
Dr. Martin Luther Podcast Jr.
But guys, there are other shows that are a part of the CPC. Let's recommend one. What do you say? How about the, what is it called? Match 3?
Match 3?
Yeah.
Patrick Klepek and two other people.
Yes. Two friends of his, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're like, hey, I've heard enough of these guys talk about video games, I'm going to hear some other people talk about video games.
Some professionals.
Go listen to them. Also, go on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Give us a review. We'll read it here on the show.
Yeah. Now, it is a national holiday today. So
that's correct.
I'm imagining that the ambivalent god, whose name I will not say, might be taking a day off?
Yeah.
Who are you talking about?
I don't know which god you're talking about.
The
Shiva?
No, Patreon.
Oh, the god Patreon. Yeah.
You mean Patreon?
Just trying to be subtle, Tim. All hell Patreon.
Patreon doesn't... Thank you. Patreon doesn't mind coming in on national holiday, even though Patreon was gonna, you know, BBQ this afternoon if anyone is down.
What were you gonna BBQ? Burgers or...
Soylent.
Liquid? Just the liquid Soylent?
We're all gonna have Soylent. Patreon needs you to chip in. Also, that stuff is not
cheap. It's pricey. Yeah.
It's way too expensive for the lack of taste.
Yeah.
Well, Patreon has been trying to kind of get into the groove with it. Thought maybe everyone coming over might, you know, it's like a party atmosphere. Patreon could get more into doing the Soylent stuff.
Sure. But
right now, it's a struggle for Patreon. Oh, Patreon
tough,
misses those burgers.
Yeah.
You know burgers?
Yeah, I do know
burgers.
Yeah,
I had one.
Burgers are tasty. Oh, they're so good.
Right. Plus, how do you barbecue Soylent?
I think you just put it on a pot.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
You just boil it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's warm is not good for this stuff. Patreon has tried everything.
Well, thanks for stopping by, Patreon.
Thanks, Patreon.
No problem. I have to get to my barbecue.
All right.
People might be arriving early. You never know at Patreon's place.
And folks, if you want more classic improvised sketches like this, go on over to patreon.com and follow the Nerdlewalks. Throw them a couple of dollars.
We're only doing them a disservice.
Yeah.
We really are. They're going to lose money in their account. And so, folks, here's the show. Everybody, welcome to Talking Games, special July 4th edition. I don't know if we've ever done a July 4th edition.
Mm-hmm.
If we were, it was right here in Clayton's basement.
Yeah.
Real hot and stuffy. I forgot it gets a little spicy down here.
Definitely during the summer.
Yeah.
Very spicy.
Yeah.
So if it sounds not different, great. We are not in the Cards Against Humanity studio today.
I don't see how it could sound any worse here.
Or any better.
Or any better. I think it's exactly the same on quality for our folks.
For sure.
Yeah.
What did we do on this podcast?
Oh, we talk about video games.
Oh!
With people from the comedy and or whatever community here in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And or whatever.
Yeah, how many people are in the and or whatever?
Yeah. Well, what have we had? We've had designers. We've had
fans of this
comedians
podcast.
Fans. Yeah. We've never had anyone from the adult entertainment industry
yet, or that we know of.
Yeah, that's true.
There could
that's true.
Be people who
some amateur
know.
Stuff. Who knows? Yeah.
Some cam girls, some cam boys.
JPC's got to make up that extra income somewhere. Yeah. I imagine he's a cam boy.
He's a cam boy.
So that's what we do, and we always start it the same way, and that is, what are we playing? Hey, Clayton, what are you playing?
Yeah! Rats! Okay, so I have been playing this game called Overwatch.
A lot of it, too.
I've been playing a lot of it, and I've been loving it.
Yeah.
Having a great time. But I also picked up a game called, Odin Sphere, and the...
Oh!
Pronunciation of the third word is tough.
Is it, like, Nordic sounding?
Yeah, Life... Thrasir.
Okay.
What sort of game is this?
So it's
Odin Sphere is a series, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Which I am not familiar with, but this game got crazy good reviews. It just was released on PS4. I think it was another like PS Vita game that no one played.
Oh, okay.
So it's you get into it and it's like it feels so far because I'm playing like the story of a Valkyrie who is the daughter of Odin, the Demon King. So there's, like, a lot of Nordic mythology kind of mixed up in there. Almost like, did you guys ever play that Valkyrie... What was it? Valkyrie Quest or whatever it was?
Valkyrie Profile. Yeah, on PlayStation?
Yes.
Yes.
Which I loved. And this game follows a weirdly similar track in terms of, like, it's sort of story-driven. You switch between characters, though I haven't done that yet. Okay. It seems like the sort of thing that you can do later on. It also is sort of a Metroidvania in terms of like, you go around and like,
or like
a... a lot like, and the art style and everything reminds me a lot of Dust,
Elysium Tail. That's great.
Another game
I really love.
The one you say in, kind of similar to a Valkyrie Profile, is that the one where you are going on like pretty standard JRPG missions, but then you're also fighting like a war in heaven that you need to send soldiers up to?
What?
That's that game. Yes.
Which is
fascinating.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Weird game.
Yeah.
A game where like it's something like a teleport spell is treated like insanely powerful.
Yeah.
And you never get access to it, but you meet like the most powerful wizard in the world and he has a teleport spell and everyone's like, "What the fuck? How's this guy able to do this?" Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? That's legit. That is a really
pretty fucking crazy. Yeah.
I loved Valkyrie Profile. I loved Dust and Elysium Tail. This feels like a combination of the two. The combat is very almost too easy. I was playing it on easy and I was like, boy, this is like, I'm not even getting hit. Like it's like nothing. So you need to keep it at normal or even bump it up to hard. Really feel like it's a challenge. But you're also graded on missions or battles like, sort of like in Devil May Cry, you know, you can
S rank,
D or whatever ranks. And the higher your rank, the more money you get as a reward. And that's pretty good incentive because money is not totally useless in this game. You can actually spend it on food and food gives you experience when you eat it. So, like, it's really well designed. I gotta say, like, every item you get, you're like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna use this, like, as soon as possible. But then to use items that give you experience, you trade off the same currency that bumps up your skills, makes your, like, powerful, like, magic and stuff like that more powerful. So, yeah, you really have to, like, pick and choose. I really like it a lot. But it's also, the story is wildly confusing. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
It does seem like every character you meet who's a man is like a huge hulking giant and all the women are like these tiny little sprites and I'm like, what the fuck kind of sex are these people having in this universe? This is horrifying.
This universe sounds really crazy.
But it is really, it's super fun. You play as a Valkyrie in the first mission, or the first like story. Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to go on or if I'm going to switch off at some point. But it seems like it's that kind of game. And the beginning, it gives you no context. You're just a girl reading books in a library.
Huh. Okay.
I really hope that it's like, all right, now you're going to read like the story of, like, you know, the elven betrayer or whatever.
Right.
Oh, and then switching a character to that one. That's cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that was my favorite thing about Valkyrie Profile. You could play, like, the stories of random characters, and you know every time they're going to wind up dead. Yeah. Like, something's going to happen or they're going to be betrayed. Ugh. The best.
And it, I mean, is it a good port from a Vita game? Because I imagine going from a Vita to a PS4, there would probably be some inconsistencies or.
Yeah, it doesn't. Nothing so far has bothered me. The only thing is the cancel button is also a magic, like, shortcut button.
Oh.
So, boy, do not hit that cancel button too much or you will wind up casting a spell and, like, losing out on, like, your what is MP in this is PP, which we really gotta be getting past that shit. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I can't deal
it's
with
tough
it.
Tough to say.
Like, I'm like, it's like, oh no, I lost 5
PP.
Great.
PowerPoints.
Are you guys both at the point now where Overwatch is, you've had a lot of fun with it, and you're still playing it, but you can start to look at other games now?
I'm starting to get to that
okay.
point. Okay. I almost was, like, done with it the other night.
Interesting.
But then, like, my internet was out this morning, and I couldn't play, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, you know. Could not handle it, so I guess I am still pretty hooked.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, I'm also playing a lot of Overwatch, but there's got to be something in it beyond competitive mode that's going to bring people to the table. Because you want to know that you're good, but the competitive modes right now, it doesn't seem like it's fun.
Yeah, they're going to have to change. I think they released competitive mode before they really had figured all of it out. Which is a new thing in gaming that I really don't like. Like, all right, well, let's basically beta test this on people who paid for it.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck off, man.
But I mean, Blizzard's known for doing that. I mean, how long did Diablo 3 go through countless open betas while it was still launched before they finally got to a place where I was like, all right, cool, it's good now.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, it's like, I don't know. They don't release, like, DLC that's, like, broken.
Yeah.
Which I feel like Bethesda has done before and,
paid
for really hard. But now it's, like, that's becoming more and more the norm, and I'm like, fuck this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's...
I don't think it's DLC,
broken.
But
it's, like, there's just not... The shallowness of the game is kind of obvious now, where it's still very fun, and you can play with friends, it's better. But you kind of clock a certain amount of hours, and you're like, yeah, I know I'm good at this, and I know I can play these characters. And when you win, it feels really great. And when you lose, it's kind of like, yeah, I don't need to keep playing this game.
Yeah.
or when you lose competitive, then you're really like, well, I could blame people, or I could blame myself, or I could just turn this game off.
Yeah,
walk away from it.
So I've been playing a lot more of Stick of Truth, and I'm really, really enjoying it. Also confused and upset about the PP. And you have your mana, your PP, and then your HP, and it's just like,
come on,
guys.
It kind of fits in South Park.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense in South Park.
Yeah.
More than in, like, a self-serious,
yes.
Like, they're going to kill my sister, but my other sister is dead. If only I had more PP.
More PP. I have to take a potion so that my PP can go up. My PP
I drank too many potions. I have too much PP.
My PP's not working.
And it's a very, very fun game. Really loving it. Defeated Man Bear Pig last night, which felt really good.
Oh, nice.
That's a very tough
battle. That's a really tough fight.
Is that the Al Gore one?
Yeah.
Yes. The whole Al Gore storyline, I'm really enjoying. And I'm also, the game itself, the fact that it's not just all, because I was like, all right, it's just going to all be about the boys playing a game, where it feels like a really great episode, and the A story, the B story, the C story, all these different things that are going on, which makes me so fucking excited.
Oh, you haven't gotten to the stuff where they're like, that they had to cut out of, like, the Australian version, have you?
No.
Oh, man.
The
you'll know it when you see it.
The surgery scene, is that what you're talking about?
Jesus. Yeah. There's stuff that, like, for real, they, in the Australian version, because it was, like, going to get banned, like, not releasable. They just made a thing where Matt and Trey just, like, talk to the camera, and they're like, well, here's what would have happened in the scene.
Wow.
Your government won't let us, like, release that here, so
holy
here's, like,
crap.
A picture of, like, a duck-billed platypus, like, laying an egg. That was, like, the most we could get away with, or something like that.
Well, it's a great game so far. It's very, very funny, and...
It is so good.
Have you gone to Canada yet?
No, I haven't gone to Canada yet.
Okay, cool. That's a fun part, too.
That is
the thing I remember the most from that game, and I'm like, this is such a stupid bit, but
it's
so funny.
Great. It's really great, and like all the side quests, it's exactly like when I was playing Skyrim, where I'm like, I don't really need to do all the main stuff. I can just do all the side stuff as much as I want. Love Butters is my companion.
Yep.
He's the best.
The paladin, right?
Paladin.
Yeah.
And then loving being a wizard because I don't really do much wizardy stuff, you know. It's very simple. And then I picked up Crypt of the Necrodancer on iOS, and I played a ton of that on Steam.
Oh, man.
And it is a rhythm-based dungeon-crawling
roguelike
game. Very fun controls. Danny Baranowski, who also did the soundtrack for Super Meat Boy, does the soundtrack for this game. And it's great. Definitely just picking it up. It's $5, so maybe wait for like a sale. Really, really great game.
Nice.
Tim, what do you play?
So Lisa and I have been house-sitting for some friends up in Skokie, so I got to play a lot of video games. I finished Tales from the Borderlands.
Oh, nice.
Really liked it.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. Did you ever play
it? I played the first two episodes. Okay. Hardwick's character was kind of grating on me a little bit.
Sure. But, he disappears after a certain point.
Well, okay.
I won't tell you what happens.
Oh, I'm... All right. Well, then I might get back into it.
Chris Hardwick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he... I didn't care much about the Borderlands universe at all, but they Telltale Games are just very good at I don't know, making good stories out of whatever. Claptrap comes back at the end, which is very fun to play with.
Nice.
And then what else did I play? I played more Outlast. I'm almost done with that.
Cool.
I got my fingers cut off.
Jeez, what?
It is a fucked up game.
Yeah, Outlast. Yeah, man, that game. I'm telling you, man, like, there were things in that game that I was just like, holy shit, I can't believe how good this is.
You get some fingers cut off, and then you immediately vomit on the floor. It is fucked up.
All first person.
Yeah.
And that's with that crazy, the
scissors, right.
And, like, all the previews
never
and
played,
stuff like
never played Atlas. I'm going to have to find this game.
Ooh, totally worth it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's not even my type of game, but it is good enough to the point where... I'm getting through it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And it is really scary. And then I picked up a new iOS game called Waterdeep, which is in the Dungeons & Dragons universe.
Ooh.
But it's a board game, which is really cool.
Neat.
If I ever get the chance to play the actual, you know, physical board game, I definitely will. But it's pretty cool.
Nice.
So, boys.
I also finished
Uncharted
3.
Oh,
but
nice.
we're talking about that with Sarah Gore next week.
Yeah.
So,
how'd you like that desert scene?
Damn it, guys.
Weren't a fan.
Was not a fan of the long crawling, just
stumbling through the desert.
Just get through it, and then instantly he's like, "Oh, I found this city, and I can jump around and shoot a bunch of guys." You know.
Well, there's a little preview for our Uncharted episode next week.
Really enjoyed the game, though.
Yeah,
but certainly all these games have some big
problems.
Big problems.
What was Clayton and I were talking about this recently? Was 3 the cruise ship at the beginning too?
Yes, that was the second act is all of the. I guess it would be the end of the first act is the cruise ship.
Okay.
And that was fantastic.
It was
all
really fun,
of the being in the cruise ship and getting around all that pirate stuff was really fantastic. And then when the cruise ship goes over on the side and you have to get through the cruise ship, all of that jumping
terrifying.
Puzzle was great.
Yeah.
Really, really fun.
Man, that is awesome.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I knew the I thought it was in the first game for some reason.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try and power through Uncharted 4 this week.
So it's the anniversary of our nation's independence today,
boys. God bless
boys.
America.
God
hell
bless
yeah,
America.
Hell yeah.
So we thought we would talk about some patriotic video games or some America-themed video games.
Yeah.
And we each came up with 3. I would be shocked if we didn't have a little bit of overlap.
There's probably going to be some overlap.
Yes.
But again, it's games that scream America, games that are American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, who wants to go first? Clayton, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I will go with a game that I think we all think of as, like, an example of a Western RPG doing things in the right way, and that is Fallout 2.
Oh!
Yeah.
See, I was going to say Fallout 3, so this is perfect.
I think Fallout 3 is also was the one I was debating, like, which of these two.
I was going to say Fallout New Vegas was going to be mine. No
that's
joke.
So funny.
Let's talk about Fallout.
Yeah, this is great.
So the reason I chose Fallout 2 over the others in this, and I also totally agree, these are all very, like, American games, is because Fallout 2 is the one where they really do let you do whatever you want.
Okay.
Which is, I think, a hallmark of, like, especially the early on, like, American RPGs. They really tried to give you a ton of freedom to, like, fuck your game up, to ruin it, like, to make it unplayable, basically, by your own action. Yeah. And that, to me, is, like, the sort of thesis statement about, like, what is so great and so wrong with, like, a lot of, like, American sort of ideology is this, like, we're gonna, like, totally just make it free for you to, like, fucking ruin this thing that is so good.
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna give you something really cool, really fun, and you can totally just, like, botch it and, like, go through town murdering everybody if you want to, but who the fuck are we to stop you?
We will make gambling your life savings away on sports over the internet as easy as possible.
Yeah,
it's gone.
And you have the freedom to do that.
Super convenient. Yeah. And we're going to, like, you know, like, you can hire a lawyer if people are like, no, you can't do this. It's like, hire a lawyer, so pay that guy to force people to let you ruin your own life.
Yeah.
Like, makes no sense.
Yeah.
But that's what I love about Fallout 2 as well. You know, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to, like, save my game and go in and just ruin things and then just go back.
It's the American dream right there.
And that's also, like, because I don't know that if they've necessarily come up with a fix for this, but Fallout 2, I remember being like, you walk into a town and you shoot the Elder, that city's just off the map for you. There's no, new quest where it's like, oh, now you're a bad guy in this city or something like that. But I do remember that being fascinating. Like, there's no, like, in Chrono Trigger, you can't just kill the old man at the end of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Tim, why Fallout 3 for you?
I mean, partially because it was set in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these landmarks and, like, historical...
There's a lot of patriotic music in
there. There is.
Which is meant to sort of be, like, maybe tongue-in-cheek, but I feel like it's so self-serious at times.
Yeah. And that's when... That's, like... You know, even just listening to the radio, you also hear these, like, old 40s and 50s, really nationalistic, sometimes a little bit racist songs.
Xenophobic. Definitely xenophobic.
Yeah. I don't think it hides the sort of shitty aspects of America and Washington, D.C. as well. I also think there's something to be said about... I heard Ken Burns talking about this recently in an interview where he was like, we are, lately at least, a nation that's obsessed with the apocalypse or society falling and crumbling. Mm-hmm. We have, like, dreams about it.
Yeah.
Probably because we all have these jobs where it's like, we couldn't even describe what we do.
Yeah.
But if everything came crumbling down, it'd be like, I am fisherman. I am fighter. Yeah. I am, you know.
Very clear class.
Identity. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
There's a, I forget where the saying sort of was, like, floating around, but it's like, we no longer are defined by what we do, but by what we consume.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No one talks about their job with, like, pride or, like, sort of, you know, that. I mean, people do, I'm sure, but then I should say, like, no one in our particular, like, social
friend
strata,
group. Yeah, right.
friend group, yeah. comedy community, in a big city like Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all just, like, you watch this new episode of, like, Broad City. You know, like, that's all people want to talk about because that's what they identify themselves as. Like, a consumer of this particular type of media.
Even podcasts or games that you're playing. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, well, you play these sort of games, so this is who you're going to be.
And that's why people say video games are good for us nowadays, because even if it's all fake, it lets us feel like a warrior or a conqueror or a savior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, important.
Yes, exactly.
What's the name of that? Liberty Prime? Is that the name of the giant robot that you build at the end of Fallout 3?
What is that?
I think it's something Prime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Liberty Prime. It's just a giant robot that talks about how, like, communism must be destroyed. And
it's
like, kind of funny, but it's also, like, kicking the shit out of the Enclave, so you're like, yeah! Like, go America! Yeah, that's a tough scene to, like, overlook when you're talking about the patriotism.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And there's also, I think the whole Fallout universe, it just has a lot of, because the for people who are unfamiliar with the lore of the Fallout universe, the sort of apocalypse happens at So America goes to war with China over some oil field or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's an alternative reality where, like, nuclear power, like, happens much earlier than we would think.
Yes.
Like, our understanding of fission and nuclear fusion happens and allows us to, the world to advance in a much rapid sort of level.
And they have AI and these robots and everything. So it looks like society basically cuts off at the 50s, I want to say. Yeah. And then everybody goes into these bunkers and comes out, and the culture of the 50s is still kind of there.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the 50s version of, like, a post-apocalyptic, like, nuclear war future.
Yes.
Basically. Like, what they thought it was going to be like back then. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, that's why there's a lot of, like, weird kind of, like, I don't know. Every game is set in, like, a city in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And where is Fallout 2 set in?
Fallout 2 is set in... I mean, both of those games are in California.
Yeah.
Because Fallout 2 retreads some of the areas from Fallout 1 as well.
I think it's near L.A. because I think L.A. is the hub now or something
You in Fallout 2, you reach up to San Francisco, but that's, like, the furthest north you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I liked Fallout New Vegas, because, again, like, Fallout 3 is great, and I think Fallout 4 has its problems, but, like, actually seeing the West in terms of how that part of America handles the fallout of the apocalypse, it seems more like, when you think about D.C. or you think about Boston, those are completely destroyed cities, and it's wild kind of seeing that, but you go to New Vegas, and it's like, no, that's just what the landscape looked like before. this is just the desert, and Vegas itself,
Vegas is still operating.
It's still operating, it's still there, and this idea that it's like the sort of seedy underbelly of Vegas is what allowed Vegas to come out of the desert as an oasis to begin with, and then that's what allows it to be there now, really screams America to me. This idea of, no, it's not about the ivory towers in Washington, D.C. It is about commerce, unmitigated. There is no bureaucracy. It is just about gang versus gang trying to make the most money, and they pile this ragtag city together in the desert. And it's like, to me, who grew up on the West Coast, that's what America means to me.
That's really funny. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
And there's also, I mean, I love the idea of, like, the NCR. Like the sort of new government, government organization coming into New Vegas also, like, and the sort of isolationist or, you know, I think the NCR is a really cool beast in the Fallout universe because it looks like maybe a new hope to some people or a remnant of this awful past we came from. But I don't know. I am of the opinion that, like, Order is good to some extent in society. You need a little bit. But then you've got another great example with, Caesar's Legion?
Yeah, the Caesar's Legion,
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing I like about New Vegas is you have these different factions who are playing against each other. And it's not that, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel, like, it's so obvious how much of a fascist organization they are that I kind of got bored with it, versus the NCR and the Caesars. I'm like, it's just like, boy, the shades of gray in that game.
Yeah.
You're really not sure who is going to be better for this world, or if one organization needs to be. That's the same thing I liked in Skyrim, where it's just like, well, you don't necessarily want just one power. Like, if you have one power, it's not going to work. You kind of do need these different factions there.
Yeah.
So.
That's so good.
Yeah.
New Vegas is probably my favorite Fallout game.
Despite all of its technical problems.
I know, right? But, like, I played it. I came to it late on the PC, and, like, a lot of those things have been fixed by then. Oh, man. You could play it through it now, and it's, like, still holds up so well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one where you just have to find, like, a sheriff for this town after you save it.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, you could just hire, like, a robot. And the robot's like, it goes from this, like, nice tour guide to, like, all right, that's it. Like, enough, cut the bullshit. Like, no more thieving in this town. Everyone's like, what the fuck? Like, this robot's crazy. Like, just totally black and white. And it's like, sorry.
I wish they would do a New Vegas with the Fallout 4 engine, though.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Take everything from the Fallout 4 engine and then do a different story with that. I think that would be very smart of Bethesda to do something like that. Because it's not like the engine doesn't work. It just take something and tell a different story and, you know, put it...
I think that was the big problem when they were making New Vegas is they built all of it for the engine they originally gave them, like Obsidian did, and then like a year and a half later into it, they're like, hey, can you put it all on this engine now? Because this old one, you know, it's too old. We want to do like a new engine.
Yeah.
It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Can you include like a Minecraft kind of a thing? Second picks? Or anything else on the Fallout universe?
No Fallout universe on this one.
Clayton, how about your second game?
Okay. Now this game is one I'm sure we're all very familiar with, and that is like the Call of Duty series.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Did you choose this?
No, I did not. Okay.
I did not either.
I chose Call of Duty not so much because of the game itself, but because of the like franchise and what happened with it. So these started out as like World War II games, for the most part, and were focused heavily on like soldiers on the front line fighting in like sometimes obscure battles that like you probably didn't seem like they meant a lot, but there were still people fighting in them, and that was kind of interesting to like highlight that. And over time, the multiplayer just kind of grew and got bigger and bigger, and because it was, you know, it was good and it was successful, but it became all the game was.
Yes.
Like, to now to the point where it's, like, just a joke, right? Like, people talk about, like...
That's why people buy it.
Yes. Right, like, the story mode is not anything, and also the story mode has gotten, like, crazy balls. They're going to space in the next one.
Right.
It's literally like Jason in space, or Muppets Go to Space, or whatever. Yeah, like,
Gremlins in space,
Leprechaun in space.
Yeah,
that's the ultimate like jump shark, right? Yeah.
Cybernetic dogs and stuff. Oh, and,
I just don't like, and I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but it doesn't appeal to me at all.
No.
And that's what I see, like, an EA and all these companies and stuff like that do the same sort of thing, where they're like, okay, what's the one thing about this game that can make the most money? Well, let's just make that all the game's about. And it's like, well, but there were these other things that were, like, part of it. It's like, fuck your other shit. What's profitable? What's the big part of this that, like, anyone can plug into? I want grandmas playing it. I want little kids playing it. You know, that sort of shit. And just trying to make it, like, as marketable as possible. And it's really interesting to see the scrappy game that, like, was trying new things. And maybe not the newest stuff. It wasn't, like, super innovative. But something kind of interesting in a world that's, like, populated by so many first-person shooters, now they're just another, like, rung in the ladder. Like, it doesn't matter at all. As long as the game sells. And I'm like, yeah, that's sort of that, like, runaway consumerism that, like, happens so often and kills big companies, where they just become, like, so massive and so huge, they don't even, like, the customers start to leave and they can't get new ones, know, and stuff like that. That's what the Call of Duty series reminds me of. It's, like, American capitalism at its most kind of, like, bloated and doing those things that, like, we all think of when we're like, what has, like, Walmart done? And you're just like, oh, God, think about all the awful things. And it's like, yeah, that's, like, Call of Duty in the future. Yeah. Like, you know, just, not really, like, you know, I don't think there's, like, any morality or anything that they're, like, representing. I think it's just money, money, money.
Yeah, and it also seems like, versus other internet multiplayer games, like, Call of Duty seems like mostly Americans and Europeans playing it versus WoW or League or Dota is much more of an international scene.
That's true.
And I think that's just because Americans are so bloodthirsty for guns and they're just something about that, like, I got gun, I am the gun, I'm going to go and shoot you, that really appeals to people or just seems very fun, and because our culture is so gun-centric. And the sort of capitalization of that, it's really weird.
And we haven't even talked about how incredibly racist the games have gotten.
Oh.
Like, because it used to be like, hey, we're shooting Nazis, and it's like, free pass, you could do this for
absolutely.
Nobody's going to say you shouldn't kill Nazis.
No, yeah, it's like, we're killing, like, quote-unquote insurgents in the Middle East, and it's like, uh-oh, what's going on? Like, and suddenly, like, I remember playing Call of Duty Ghosts. I think
you were one of six people who played that.
I didn't like it. but like I started counting like women and non-white men in the game. Boy, there was like five, maybe six in the whole game. Most of them were like killed off within moments of being introduced. I was just like, wow. we're just going for it, huh? Like, yeah. Not even pretending anymore.
No. Am I also right in thinking that it was Call of Duty 3 Modern Warfare where we had the first... It's the scene where you walk into an airport and just mow down civilians?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is... It's an innovation in video games.
It's Call of Duty 2 Modern Warfare.
Oh,
that's
okay.
When it happens. Yeah, yeah.
Modern Warfare
yeah.
2.
Yeah.
Yes.
Call of Duty, the Modern Warfare 3 is the sort of... That's when they kind of take it from, all right, you're just a guy, to this, there's a world war going on.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, that's
the
right.
Eiffel Tower is falling, you know, that's sort of
yes.
Michael Babel
Jesus
shit.
Jesus Christ. But that was... I mean, that was truly upsetting to a lot of people in the
yeah.
video game community
yeah.
For a long time, especially because, like... That especially, you know, right now we're dealing with that a lot lately.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's an option in that game to skip it.
To skip it,
too,
yeah.
Which in my mind is like, that's even more kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you want to just pretend this didn't happen? And it's like, well, what the fuck? Wait, what?
I wrote this.
I think you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't with putting a scene like that in a game.
Yeah.
Probably sold a whole lot of units, though.
I think when you talk about, like, the corruption of the series over... a certain amount of time, like, when it started, playing World War II games, it still, it makes you feel like a good guy
yeah,
in
yeah.
a video game.
Because you're playing for the good, you're playing for the winners.
Yes, and also, it harkens back to a time when America was, I guess people can argue this, especially with the use of nuclear weapons, but like, we were the good guy in World War II. A lot of people would argue.
Well, yeah, the Allies, I think,
yes.
in general,
no.
came out on the right side of history with
yes.
that whole Holocaust thing.
Right. We didn't
easy
do
to be
that.
Like, hey, boys, we liberated some concentration camps. Boy, did we ignore them for a long time.
Sure.
Boy,
yeah.
did we.
And we also, you know, divided up the Middle East, and most of the problems that we have today are because of the actions we
yeah,
took.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We took in
fucking...
Africa and Southeast Asia.
We didn't do a Holocaust, bro.
No,
we
no,
didn't
we,
put a time bomb.
Even... I'm sure there's plenty of blood on our fucking hands.
Or if you even look at, like, I think
we get it. We get it.
There
it's
was
all Hitler's fault.
What's the hardcore history guy, Dan Carlin?
Dan Carlin, yeah.
He did a great episode on... Why do we have such painful or negative memories about the first atomic bomb when we were firebombing cities in Japan?
Yeah.
They were doing so much worse
so
than
much
that
worse.
Every day.
So,
yeah.
so much.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting.
But at the same time, you're on Normandy Beach, there is an instant feeling of, like, I'm
right.
the good guy.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
You know.
Totally.
Which is something we're all searching for in America.
I think so.
Yeah.
It would be a lot easier. I mean, that's the nice thing about ISIS for the media. They're like, bad guy. We don't like bad guy.
Yeah,
ooh,
right.
Easier
ooh,
to
ooh,
just shit
right
bad guy.
They're making it easy for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Kellen, how about you?
Well, I am going to go on a similar sort of route in terms of the differences, the strange sort of changes that have happened.
This thing is beeping.
Something is going on. For some reason,
I
thought he needed to clean something.
I didn't think it would make any difference. I was like, this thing is fucking filthy. Let me clean it for like half a second.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it made some stuff turn out in my room. I had to turn it off.
I'm
going
to take us back to the mid-90s to a plucky game called Grand Theft Auto.
Oh boy, I have one of those on my list
yes,
as well.
Yes, Grand Theft Auto, you're looking at this whole series, it's a top-down, you're just trying to get cars, you're trying to make money, living the American dream. Again, the underbelly, a lot of the themes of the games that I'm playing, I'm going to be suggesting. And then that game goes to Grand Theft Auto 2, and it gets bigger, and you're in the UK, and it's wild. And then we have Grand Theft Auto 3, and it's third person, and it's
first,
bigger.
Like, great console open box.
Yes,
yeah,
and it's
open
an
world.
Open world,
yeah.
And you can do whatever you want, and you're helping people, and you're driving cars, and it's great, and that gets bigger, and it gets bigger, and then we go to California. And now you have Grand Theft Auto 5, which is the most successful monetary game that has ever been produced. They've made over $1 billion when they sold the game. The first weekend of the first release, not on the new consoles, on the original release, they made $1 billion in 3 days.
Yeah.
And
Jesus Christ.
I don't know, I believe it's $15 billion has been made on the online game.
And they spent an incredible amount of money making that
making
game.
Making that
too.
Game, yes,
yeah.
exactly. And the game is satiric, and the game talks about what it means to be an American and how shallow we are. And I can't think of anything more American than creating something that slaps its user in the face on how stupid you are for playing the game and for doing the game, that has little moral sort of reasoning as about depravity is about being shallow, all about surface level stuff, being able to customize your things, and then just going out there and murdering people for fun. Right. and I bought two versions of that game. I bought it on the 360, and I now have it on the PS4. That game came out when Dennis was born, and I felt myself disgusted by that game when he'd be sleeping in the next room. And now I play it, and he sleeps in the other room, and I'm like, this ain't so bad. This ain't so bad because we're so desensitized to what the game is trying to say and make us do. But I also think it's a very cool game in the sense where that game takes risks that other games won't. That game tends to be an innovator. Oh. And I think... I will continue playing anything that Rockstar puts out. Like, I mean, it was a tie between that and Red Dead Redemption in of what I wanted to do. Because I think Red Dead has the same sort of things, but it was like, all right, do I do Red Dead or do I do Fallout New Vegas? And I think Fallout New Vegas says more about the West than Red Dead does. But yeah, I think that game represents so much about America and, like, entertainment and having a fun time and... There is a physical bit going on right now. I can't describe to you what is happening.
I have been playing with things, and Clayton keeps taking them away from me and giving me different things to play with.
I want to see Tim just like handle everything in my apartment.
They're all oddly cylindrical items. Yeah. You didn't give him something square or something circular.
We're going with water bottle.
It also it says a lot about the video game industry today too. Which is like, I mean, I guess Grand Theft Auto is in America probably like one of the gold standards as far as
I would think so.
Video games. We put the most money into those games.
And I think when people think about video games who are non-video game players, they probably think of a Call of Duty or they think of a Grand Theft Auto.
That's very true. Yes.
In terms of what is wrong and why you shouldn't play video games, you probably think, Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto. Or when you play video games, what's the most fun you can have, a Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah. And it's, you don't think about people, people don't think about, like, this kid who, like, died because he played StarCraft for so long he forgot to eat, or whatever.
I mean, that's South Korea. We're not talking about them. But they'll have their episode, folks.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? Yeah, like, because that's how we see, especially in America, that's how we see games. We think about, the violent ones who, like, teach our kids to be violent, which is, like, not an argument that I'm interested in having. But,
no.
But, yeah, it's like, they don't think about the, like, you know, WoW being, like, you know, this huge time and money suck. They're like, they're like, no, it's that Grand Theft Auto game because you can like have sex with a stripper and then kill her.
Yes,
and like
that was a huge part. Yeah, right.
It's the content of the games bothers them more than like the addiction to it.
Yeah, I was gonna pick San Andreas out of the Grand Theft Auto series because I think it has a I like the setting of San Andreas and it. It's a whole exploration of an American a subculture that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, and it's also about a group of people that are marginalized by their society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they are, I mean, not with like the subtlety of like The Wire or anything like that, but it explores.
not quite.
It's still a Grand Theft Auto game. I mean, it gets wacky at times.
Yes,
San Andreas. I mean, like when you go up to San Francisco. And you're like, all right, well, there's a rival toy maker, and you have to use these toys to destroy toys. I'm just like, boy, we really got off the rails from the I'm a gang member, and I'm just trying to get out of the hood.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't want to do this anymore, and now you're here. And that was the, you know, I like that. I love this idea of, like, rags to riches. And, I mean, Grand Theft Auto V and I think San Andreas show you that, where it's like, you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
No matter how much money, no matter how much guns you have, you are born into this caste, and you're going to be there, and you're going to die there.
And these are people that don't have any other options.
No,
either.
They have no other options.
Yeah. Right.
San Andreas and Grand Theft Auto V do a very good job of taking that kind of stuff off the pedestal and really making you live in it. Whereas I feel like Vice City was like, it's the 80s, man. Do fucking coke. Go fucking be that guy. Whereas... I mean, and San Andreas did a really good job of, like, no, man, the hood's a terrible place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I remember playing San Andreas and, like, all the, like, the meth story, the, like, all that cocaine and the crystal meth stuff, that was really scary to be thinking. It was like, oh, this is these people's lives, you know?
And even looking at neighborhoods as, like, a battleground. You know, you had that map that was like, this part is your color.
Yeah.
So,
and
or this part is
coming
their...
in.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I also think Grand Theft Auto is a little bit American in the sense that there's just not really women involved.
No.
Like, they're just sort of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a Grand Theft Auto game with a female protagonist. I don't know what that would look like, but... Yeah.
It does feel, it feels like the very, male fantasy, American 100%. Male fantasy. Yeah, hardcore. Yeah. That's interesting.
You can play a lady in the multiplayer, guys.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Problem solved. You're welcome, America.
They're just harder to animate.
It's impossible to get it right. I mean, they tried, the Dead or Alive guys. I mean, they've got the patents on that sort of physics. It's just impossible. Jesus.
The jiggle physics?
The jiggle physics, exactly.
Clayton, your third choice?
All right, this is the most American game I could think of.
Here we go.
The first one I thought of, Spec Ops The Line.
Wow. Oh, that's a great pick.
I can't think of a game that more just goes after, America for being America and American gamers for being American gamers, so effortlessly and so artfully, while also being a pretty, competent but not very great game. But man, oh man, the stuff that game made me feel about, the shame of,
it's not what nice I had to do. You.
It really, boy,
it doesn't
not.
Hold back. Yeah.
For those who are not familiar, Spec Ops: The Line was didn't sell very well. It was not very highly critically acclaimed, but it made Tim was showing his belly. It was great. it is really, those who did like it really, really liked it. So I picked it up, on a Steam sale for really cheap and played through it and was just horrified. At times, didn't want to keep playing, which is what the game really actively tries to do, is to say, you can stop at any time, but you aren't. And one of the hardest parts of the game, and I kind of knew this was coming, is you are, in front of this huge, basically just this valley of enemy combatants. And this is in Dubai, and it's...
After a sandstorm, right?
After, horrendous sandstorm that has, basically made most of the population homeless and turned this former army guy into basically, the dude from Heart of Darkness. It's fucking, so disturbing, but you have to get through this valley of bad guys. And if you try to shoot your way through, you run out of ammo and get killed.
Mm-hmm.
There's the only way, and the game sort of points this out to you, even though everyone in the game is like, we really shouldn't do this, we've seen how awful this is, you've seen it firsthand in previous fights, you could use these white phosphorus, basically fire bombs, mm-hmm. and you can do it unopposed. You murder all these guys. You hear them screaming. It your guys who are, working with you to launch them are, getting more and more, is this a... Are we done? Can we stop now? It's there's still a few more! It's just, this really hard scene to do. Once you get through it, you pass under this bridge and see they were keeping a bunch of civilians down there. And you killed all of them.
Yeah.
With white phosphorus, which is one of the most painful, according to the game fiction, one of the most painful ways to die. And you're just confronted with what you did unknowingly, but totally willingly. And I almost turned the game off and walked away because I was like, they play it totally straight. It is so hard to deal with. And then by the end, you're just murdering people, mowing down guys who are shooting at you with just handguns, trying to defend their homes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. But really well done, because it's not treated look at this, fucking, male fantasy. It's treated much more if this is what you want, gamer.
Yeah.
If this is what makes you feel good about yourself. And the hints when you start to die are video games are good for you and stuff that. They're just saying, nothing violent about what you're doing. You must feel really good about yourself. Stuff like that.
It's
really, really fucked up. Really good. And in the end, you're given sort of a choice. You can... the American troops come in and they're just trying to get you into a helicopter, and you have a gun,
mm-hmm.
and you can open fire on them and get gunned down. You can open fire on them and kill all of them and be your own little king of Dubai. Congratulations. Or you can put your gun down and surrender.
Yeah.
And there's been numbers of people who, what they did and everything like that. Almost no one surrendered.
Wow.
Weirdly. Because you feel so much no, I can justify all this if I just go in deep mm-hmm. enough. It's an incredible game, an incredible experience.
Yikes.
Sorry I spoiled so much of it for
you. No,
yeah. But, yeah, it's one of those that, like, you know, playing it is almost more painful than, like, it should be. And that's why a lot of people hated it. I think it's like, this isn't why I play video games. It's like, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what's really
interesting. Let's look at
about
that. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Dragging that stuff out into the light is what has made America be able to avoid becoming one of these, like, dictatorships or one of these, like, I mean, you know, a true oligarchy, even though you could argue. But, like, that's the thing that's so great about America is, like, when you drag this stuff out into the light and make people kind of deal with it, most of the time they do. Like, most of the time they'll say, ah, fuck, well, we gotta deal with this whole Watergate situation because it's out, it's on the table now, we gotta deal with it.
I truly feel like, you know, so much more than, say, calling your congressman, like, a good John Oliver segment will guilt representatives into doing something
way more.
It's interesting. I mean, you hear stories, though, from people like Jon Stewart, who was on the air for 16 years, and it's like, time and time again, they do those segments every single day, and he even said, he's like, I can't do anything.
I was not helping.
I was not helping, you know? And it's like, I feel the same way. I'm like, John Oliver, Jon Stewart, Samantha Bee, all of these people are doing good for us, but there is some way of like, well, you watch that, you think about it, you post something on Facebook, and you're alleviated from the problem.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Versus calling. It's so fucking hard,
it's
man.
It's very interesting, Well, nowadays, it's even more so, like, the endless stream of media.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to be a downer, but Spec Ops The Line is the one that I chose.
And it's a great game, and it's also one of those games where I feel like may never be made again.
No.
You know,
no, almost certainly. Right.
No, it's not like someone said, boy, that game nailed it.
It didn't make great money either.
No.
You know?
Which, unfortunately, that was like the big, that was the thing everyone remembers. Is like, oh, that's like that game flopped.
But wouldn't you rather go down swinging like that? Like,
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, a comedian's, comedian.
Yeah.
You think about that where it's like, well, the people who are in the know, the people who appreciate this are going to watch this and be like, Jesus Christ.
This person's never going to make money on a grand scale.
No.
Yeah, right.
But it's so ambitious and you got to respect it. I mean, that was the thing is like, I heard two different reviews the same week it came out and one was like, it's a by-the-numbers shooter. Didn't really do anything for me. Yeah, and it's like, the people who just were focused on the gameplay and didn't like sort of like see past that, and then there were I remember the reason I played it was Yahtzee Crenshaw did a zero punctuation about it that was like, it's like I went into this game thinking it was going to be one thing, and then slowly it started to convince me that it wasn't, and by the end I was like having a real weird time, and I wish more games would do stuff like this. I don't think they did it as effectively as like you know, a game that like really spent its time and like polished up the gameplay and stuff like that probably would have done it better, but holy shit, like, everyone needs to play this game if for no other reason just to, like, think about this stuff and talk about it. Ah, it's great.
Kellen?
I'm gonna take you guys back on the time machine to a little place.
Yeah, time machine.
Called Eugene, Oregon in 1994.
All along the watchtower.
Super Nintendo system is out. People are playing games on it. People are having a great time. And in Seattle, Washington, there is a baseball player who is changing the way people play the game. And his name is Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, my God.
And people say there's no way baseball can be fun. There's no way baseball can be interesting. And they make a Super Nintendo game called Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball.
Yeah.
It's a great game. It's simple. It captures the American sport better than any other game that's ever come, better than any other game that ever will be. You get to play as Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I would say it was Mr.
Cruz USA. That was what I was going to do.
Yeah, or like, for me, in that genre, like Tecmo Bowl is, you know.
Because that's the thing, we don't talk about sports games, but there are games out there that people play religiously, and I think in terms of my early baseball, early video game experience, I played that game probably more than Super Mario World, than any other game that was on the Super Nintendo, because I had friends who had it, and it was a game that I could play against other people, even though I didn't play baseball, but I had a great time playing that game, and because I liked playing that game, I got into baseball. I had friends who were into baseball, and that was just their world, and I don't know. I'm a big fan of baseball now.
It's
fun sport. fun sport to listen to on the radio. Hate watching it. on the television, but listening to it on my app, really have a great time. But yeah, I think that's actually a very good game. Again, hard contrast from Spec Ops: The Line.
I think they're saying largely the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But big time. I do think that there is something pastoral about that game in terms of like, hey man, it's 1994.
Yeah.
Let's just play some baseball. There was no sort of legacy aspect of like, hey, you can play a season, or you could just be like, no, just play a game. You want to play the Mets versus the Padres? Sure, why not? Hey, the Montreal Expos are in that game. They're not around anymore. Just have a good time. And there is a figurehead in terms of Ken Griffey Sr. was a great player. So Griffey Jr. playing a game with a recently expanded team with the Mariners and just having a good time. Not recently expanded, excuse me.
I had a blast playing that game. There was a lot of fun, like, as the pitcher, like, throwing crazy. Yes. You had so much control over the ball and where it went.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's funny, you think about sports games, and you go to, like, a GameStop or a People Play Games, mm-hmm. and you look at the, like, under a dollar bin, it's just iterations of sports games.
Yeah, because the moment the sports game comes out... The new one, well, the old one is worthless.
Absolutely.
Completely worthless. And it's like, no, what the fuck? That's insane. It's absolutely insane.
And we're not even talking about leaps and bounds in terms of innovation from year to year.
And it's mostly because they just turn the servers off.
Yes.
They can do that. EA, who has the, the sort of rights for a lot of that stuff, or 2K for the NBA games, they just turn the servers off. So it's not going to be updating. You can still play it, but... People who play those sports games are so diehard about making sure it's like, oh no, this is the most up-to-date, version of this player. And it's just like, well, you're kind of locked in that way,
NBA 2K16.
You were a big fan, right?
I think it was 2K14.
That's right.
I played a lot, which I really liked. Yeah. But 2K16 is free right now on the PSN. I was like, I don't know. Am I really going to play this ever? It's because I played 2K14 so much and I loved it. And I was like, but it's the same fucking...
Well, there's now microtransactions.
Oh, well. Yeah, you got to love that. The pot. God, Jesus. Hard pass.
I've been recently considering getting a golf game.
PS4.
There's really something about being an old man. That's like, just sitting down playing some fake golf sounds fun.
Yeah. That Wii Golf game. I played so much of that. I loved it.
Yeah.
So much. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with a little golf game, though. Because it's just like, it's just you and the ball. Tim, what's your third game?
I went real literal definition of American game for this last one. And that is, I don't even think it's a great game.
Okay.
But we're talking Assassin's Creed 3.
Wow. Okay.
There you go.
You are fighting the revolution.
There you are.
In America.
Yeah.
I remember I got that right after I got let go from my current company for the first time.
Sure.
And I was just playing video games a lot, and I got XCOM and Assassin's Creed 3. XCOM, such a better game.
Yes.
But there is something about meeting like Lafayette and Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and fighting alongside them with this absurd Native American ninja that is really fun. Oh, yeah. It was also like just to walk through those battlefields and like those colonial cities, which is fascinating. And you couldn't quite do the Assassin's Creed thing because American cities weren't built up the time.
Yeah. There was barely a city.
Yes. You were just running through trees, the wilderness or swamps or whatever it was. But it was also, I love the rich colonial history. I also love the beginnings. You saw the beginnings of the ship-to-ship combat that you saw in Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah.
Ooh,
which, so once you got to it, you're like, oh, this could be the whole game.
This is all I need.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I think that's great. It's a shame that's not the game that they have to... fucking hammer in all of this animus stuff and all the stuff outside. And
that was
all
unforgivable.
Bullshit, just completely unforgivable. Again, like, I think a game, same thing with Assassin's Creed Black Flag, where it's like, just do all that. Just do it in this world. Commit hard to this. Don't do this stuff outside of the game. It's really boring. It's just so...
Boy, they learned that lesson. Because in Assassin's Creed Black Flag, it's barely there.
You're
just walking around a little bit, and it's like, all right, I'm done. Yeah. Let me get back in the game.
But you could just do all the Revolutionary War stuff. I think that'd be a great game.
Yeah,
you
know? I agree.
I would love to see them try that. But it's Ubisoft, so they're not going to take any risk at all.
No.
Syndicate, so boring. You know, I will say, honorable mention, Broforce.
Oh, I was going to say Broforce. Broforce is great, yeah. Broforce is very fun. If you enjoy, you know, macho 1970s, 80s, and 90s action movie tropes, it's fucking great.
Sure.
That's that game of, and I think XCOM has this, but in a more serious way. Yeah. But it's that idea of just like, you know, if we just commit hard enough and get enough tough guys, we can probably solve any problem that the world has to throw at us. Like this very, like, 80s American kind of idea. It's so funny. I love Broforce so much.
It's great.
Did you realize you could just, like, shoot the president?
Yeah. Man. There's an achievement for that.
Man, looks like I'm going back.
There you go.
Replaying Broforce.
Yeah.
Well, folks, what's your favorite American game? Bother Clayton on Twitter.
Yeah.
And don't be nice about it either.
Yeah. I have no feelings of hurt, folks. It's at Clayton Margeson. Tell me what your Patriot games are. I'll tell you how little I care about your favorite. But you can be mean to me, too. It's right. Fun.
It's good.
It's the exchange.
It's the fun exchange.
But we all seem to like the ones that...
maybe skewer that American
dream. I was going to say. Yeah. Well, folks, thank you for joining us
Tim
here.
Tim looked at us like, well, anything else you guys want to say?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything else.
Like, Tim, you're in the middle of a sentence. Just,
go ahead, dude.
Thank you for joining us. Let's do some plugs. Anybody got anything they want to plug?
Check out Late 90s Wednesdays at 10:30 at I.O. Also at I.O., I am in a show called Desert Cool. That starts not this coming Friday, but next Friday, July 15th, 8:30. Runs for 6 weeks in the Chris Farley Cabaret Theater at I.O. Come check that out. I play pretty much every villain in the in the play, and also a bartender who I got the note the other day of playing more cartoony, and I was like, hey. No problem. Like, boy, did you give me a note I can run with? So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. It's a Desert Cool.
Desert Cool. Come see the newly titled The Dead Boy Scout Musical at the Annoyance Theater.
Awesome.
Saturdays at 8 o'clock. Preview start this Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of funny and talented people in the show. There's almost three casts in this show. There are so many understudies in it, and people are so busy right now because we have, like, four people going on boats midway through.
Oh, yeah, right.
So there's a lot of stuff going on. So literally, come see it multiple times because it's never going to be the same show. I mean that in a positive way.
Yeah,
It's going to be a very fun show. The Dead Boy Scout Musical at the Annoyance Theater, 8 o'clock on Saturdays.
Nice. As for me, only about a month out from Concert Against Humanity. Buy your tickets online. Google Concert Against Humanity. Should be a good show. Next week, we're coming back to hear why Kellen doesn't like the desert scene in Uncharted 3.
Gladly. I'll tell you. And folks, just so you know.
And now I know exactly what you're going to hate about Uncharted 4. I think I've gotten enough of a barometer for what you like and don't like of these games. I'm like, I know what you're going to like. I know for sure what you're not
Seems like you like the combat. Right?
At times, though. But okay. Like, all right. Here's a preview of these games. I'm just so confused as to why Naughty Dog is considered such a good storyteller when there are so many giant holes in who these characters are and why they fucking do things. And I'm tired of the story. Oh, well, it's a pulp story and it's doing this. It's like I've got answers to all that stuff. That being said, Uncharted 3 was my most enjoyable experience.
Oh.
I enjoyed parts of 2, but I think 2 was really talked up so much.
I think people talk about the train scene.
The train scene is great, but I'll tell you what killed me on Uncharted 2. That ending of Uncharted 2 is so over the top. is so...
Is that the one where you're just running out of the city as it, like,
that's collapsing?
Explodes?
Yeah, but that's all of them. That's what all of them end that's with true. Him running up. I'm talking about the boss fight, where it's like, he drinks the thing, and then he's strong, and you gotta run around in a circle. It's like, this is so bad. this is ruining... And that's the thing, the third act of all the games tend to ruin my enjoyment of the game so far.
When supernatural elements get involved, it gets tough.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
I think you'll like 4.
I think I'm going to like 4 because everything that I've heard is that 4 learned all the good things from Last of Us, and it's finally explaining, like, hey, maybe Nathan Drake is kind of an asshole. And I'm like, but that's all I need you to say.
Finally. Yeah.
So, we'll see.
All right. Nice. Well, let's meet back, well, not here, but at Cards Against Humanity next week to record.
Great.
Clayton, take us out with one of your catchphrases.
Eat up, piggy!
Bye, everybody.
Bye!
This has been a Nerdalogs production. If you'd like to help make more things like this, please visit patreon.com/nerdalogs to donate today, and go to www.nerdalogs.com for more cool stuff. Thanks for being awesome!
Thank you all. I am GrabBot23548X.